Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantuck Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, and it is a glorious day. At the bottom of the hour, I have a very special guest, Amra Sabish El Reyes, and she has written a very powerful memoir, and it's called The Cat I Never Named, and it's a true story of love, war, and survival. A really amazing, amazing story. But right now, I get to turn to our... Oh, I wish she was in the studio, because I know sometimes she's in Clearwater here, and it's just so wonderful to welcome to the program Susan Santangelo. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Patsy. I'm sorry we're not face-to-face, too, but that's the way it goes, I guess.
Yeah, I always love when people come in the studio. And first, you guys always bring me an autographed copy of the book.
We can make that happen some way or other, I promise.
And it's just always such a pleasure to have somebody here in the studio with me. But right now, I am surrounded here. With Clorox number 5, so it's the new perfume for the year 2020. People are going to look back on this, and are you?
She dropped off.
Oh boy, she dropped off. We're going to try to get her back because we want to talk about her books. We have her number. Maybe she's going to call back. Who knows? Anyway, Big Ed did a nice big cleaning in here, although it's already, I think, gotten into my throat. But every place I go, I stop. Wherever you go now, it's completely sanitized. And so, there she's coming back in a minute. So I get to talk to her because we lost her. And now she's back, and this is going to be a wonderful time because I really, really, first of all, I love your name. I love your name.
When I wrote the book, I didn't realize how appropriate it was going to be. But thank you for liking the title.
Oh, politics can be murder. Every wife has a story. Oh, boy. This is true. And, of course, we get all this fun again of... This is book number 9. Now, I know that I started reading you. I didn't start reading your books until book number 6. I think it was number 6. That was the one that was called Second Honeymoons Can Be Murder. You find murder everywhere, don't you?
I do. I can knock a person off anywhere you want.
That's right. That's not true. So we have that another adventure here of Carol and Jim Andrews as they navigate life's highway. This series is so much fun, and I love all the titles. You've done everything right with this series, you know?
Well, thank you.
The titles are great. They one after another, I always like... know which one I like the most, but I love the Second Honeymoon one. But I also like The Dieting Can Be Murder.
Yes.
Was a result of somebody being here in Florida on vacation indulging, let's say,
a little too much. Not that we are not doing that now, of course.
No, but we could all go back maybe to that diet.
I know.
Can be murder. We might want after this politics, because we're going to be filled with politics for the next I don't know how many days, but then a lot of people, nervous people, are going to be eating a lot of ice cream. So after politics can be murder, they can go to dieting. Can be murder.
Well, you know that's true. Maybe we should revise it and send it out again. I have to talk to the publisher.
No,
about that.
Seriously,
the pandemic version. Yes, good idea.
No, really, do it because I am hearing from people that they are. It's either chocolate pudding, which is my sister's favorite. Now she is called the connoisseur. In our neighborhood, in the whole area, I think now the whole world, because I've been talking about her, she's considered the connoisseur of cozy mysteries. She's been reading Cozy Mysteries for a lot of years, and she loves them, and she recognizes them. Many times she brings authors to me. She'll say, you have to talk to this one. So, of course, she is a great admirer of your work. She loves
thank you.
She loves your work.
Thank you.
She loves the covers.
Oh, I do, too. I love the covers. I really do. And, of course, I must say that the dogs that are on the covers are actually real dogs.
Uh-huh.
They are my dogs. They are my dogs.
And in the book, of course, they have different... Lucy and Ethel.
Lucy and Ethel in the book. Yes, two girls. Yes.
But the covers also are clever because you have perhaps a little clue in there somewhere built in,
which
I think is nice. That's one of the things my little sister loves, that kind of thing. It's like Carolyn Hart always had, you know, built this wall with clues so people could sort of figure out the puzzle of things. And so with your cover, she has to look. She does not do Kindle. Yeah, you know, she does not
It's hard, isn't it? Well, I love Kindle, of course, because we sell a lot of books on Kindle, but you just don't get the full effect of the covers.
Oh, yeah.
And the only problem that we ever have is that the artist cannot start drawing the cover until I finish the book.
Because
it drives them crazy because I want to have as many clues as possible on the cover that are so cleverly hidden, but that people, when they read it, they can go back and look at the cover and they can say, oh, look at that. There's your murder weapon. What, you know? But, you know, until we're done, she can't start.
And who knows?
Work it out.
Who knows how your mind works as you're writing? You never know what's going to happen and what these people will do or what Lucy and Ethel will suggest.
And Lucy particularly has a mind of her own. She's getting too big for her leashes, I think. She really is.
Oh, you have created a wonderful world here. Tell us about let's first talk about this politics can be murder, because as I said, it's perfect today. Like, yes, what a day, you know, that's all people are thinking about. And it's funny, you know, when you're reading it, I'm not going to call her ditzy, although people will have called her worse. She might be a little ditzy.
She is sometimes.
Yeah, we don't always think of Carol as a campaign manager.
No, God knows. No. But she has another image of herself that a lot of people don't share.
Yes, that's true. So tell us, what happens to Carol? How does she become a campaign manager?
Actually, this sort of picks up from the end of book 8, which is In-Laws Can Be Murder. There was a red herring that I threw into that plot, and I decided it would be interesting to come back and solve that red herring. Because when I'm writing, I like to challenge myself. And I thought, you know, when I did it in book 8, it was just sort of a throwaway. But then I thought, well, you know, let's pick that up then, and let's have the murder actually have already happened. And so that's the way the book starts. The book starts with this hit-and-run accident. And it turns out to be a schoolmate of Carol. And then one thing leads to another at the funeral service. And then all of a sudden, Carol finds herself knee-deep in politics to get involved in this campaign for this woman who's running on what Carol thinks is the perfect platform to honor her dead friend. And, of course, it doesn't all go as planned.
It certainly doesn't. But then it never does.
No, never does.
And and as the characters take over your head.
Yes, it's so true. They do.
Isn't it fun?
It is fun. I have never had so much fun in my life as writing these books. And people have said to me, well, how long are you going to keep writing? And I said, until I'm dead. You know, I mean, especially during this time, which is so stressful, it's so much fun to go into my pretend world, which is so much easier to deal with than the news today.
Oh, that's for sure. We want to stay in your world because it is, exactly. And the wonderful thing is that you can continue.
Yes, well, I've already started book 10, which is called Mistletoe Can Be Murder. It's obviously a Christmas mystery. So, you know, I'm keeping on going as long as I can.
Well, you were, so last year, I think, was your 10th anniversary. You started in...
Yes, correct.
Yeah,
right.
So 10th anniversary of that. And, you know, I had an author on for her 97th birthday. Eugenia Lovett West, and she's still writing strong, and her book, and I was, you know, she writes lovely books, some are sort of historical romances, some mysteries, but her most recent one was about cybercrime. Now, she knew nothing about cybercrime when she started that book, and she's 97 years old.
Wow.
And she did her research, and she writes so beautifully and so knowledgeably, and she's 97. So, you're going to be celebrating your 50th anniversary someday.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but I would like to look forward to that and see. You know, I've already celebrated my 50th wedding anniversary, so, you know, that I can notch that one off in my belt.
Exactly. Wow.
But I've always been fascinated by politics. Ever since I was a child, I was always interested in politics, and I was involved in some campaigns personally, although nothing like Carol got involved in. But I just thought that it was such a timely topic. I didn't realize, I think, when I was writing the book, how timely the topic would be and how timely the actual title would be. But
it is.
But I had fun with it. I had fun with it. Yeah. I really did.
And of course, when you have all these wonderful characters in your head, and then you can fit them into the story, isn't it exciting?
Yes, it's wonderful. And, you know, there are times, as I know you know, because you've spoken to so many authors over the years, that you might have a favorite character, and for some reason or other, they just don't work in the plot that you're writing right now. And that is always sad to me, but then you can bring them back in another book, and if they're well-behaved, of course. And, they do sort of come and go, but I sometimes hear from readers, well, what happened to Nancy? Nancy wasn't that prominent in this plot. What happened? Did she and Carol have a fight? I thought, no. They're going to get back together. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine.
And, of course, we always have Jim.
We have Jim, yes.
Yeah, he could be a campaign manager. No, we might expect that from him.
Well, yeah, he really does know a lot. I think he knows a lot more than Carol gives him credit for, honestly. And he is a long-suffering husband, I have to say. He puts up with a lot. He gets back at her now and then, though. I don't know if you remember, in one of the books, they had a honey-don't jar. Where they, instead of a honey-do jar, for a week or so, they made a list of each other's faults. And they put it into a honey don't jar, one for each of them. Uh-huh. And then at the end of the week, they had to draw out one from the other's jar, and they had to refrain from that particular habit for the next week. And I got lots of mail about that. People thought that was a really cool idea.
Uh-huh.
And some people wanted to know if I've done that in my house, and the answer is no.
No.
So,
no.
I was
that,
not
that's
take
that's
that
why
chance.
You're celebrating your 50th anniversary.
That's right. That's
yeah.
Exactly right.
Exactly. And in fact, I could never have done that because my husband, I have to say, just always did everything for me. So I could. The reason I've read 10,000 books, you know, people say, well, how can you read 10,000 books? And I said, well, you know, my husband did all the work in the house. I read a lot before I met him, but then after I met him, he was a better cook, and he had been in the military, so he cleaned better than I did.
Wow.
I mean, I was like, you know, and also he had a mother who... like he was obsessive cleaning, so he just learned well, you know. And so I you want to make dinner? Yeah, dear. I'm reading a great book. I can't stop.
Can you clone him or rent
yeah.
him out?
Oh well,
you
I
can
wish
make
him.
A fortune.
Yeah, this is a kind of husband that a writer or somebody who loves to read books needs. But this is absolutely fantastic, the way that you put together this this series up. Now, how do you feel? I mean, you've gone all these years, and I feel that there's a, I'm not saying improvement, but I think, you know, you are getting better and better because you're really great with these red herrings, and you really plan things out. You know, they maybe not in your mind, but they happen.
and you know, Patsy, because you know books so well, that there are people who actually outline every single scene before they actually start the book. And I have a really dear friend up north who does that, and it takes her months to do the outline. And I would rather just sit down at the computer and just let it happen the way that a reader would pick up the book and read it. And people are always surprised at that, but I don't honestly know how it's going to end until it ends. Because sometimes there's a twist and a turn that comes into the mind, and I cannot explain how it happens, but it changes everything. And, of course, then the advantage that the writer has is that they can then go back and they can plant, as you call all the red herrings, to make it all make sense.
And you do it so well. And
well, thank you. I try. I do try.
Now, yeah, of course, it's, because I've been talking to a lot of authors a lot of people who aren't authors yet, but who are now trying during this pandemic. They've listened to my words of wisdom that I give at the beginning of the show, that this is a program for writers and those who dream of writing. So many of them have started writing, and they're sending me messages, and they're saying, oh, I'm finally writing. I'm actually writing. They listen to some of them have bought the T-shirt that's on my Facebook page. It's called A Page a Day. And they bought the T-shirt, A Page a Day, and they're doing it.
You're going to have lots of books dedicated to you when this is over, Patsy.
Yeah, I think so. I really do.
Yeah.
This is because they are. But I did have to admonish one of them that, you know, you finish the book, okay, but then there's the editing. And there's have to face the reality, right?
Oh, yes. You really do. And of course, the other humbling experience is that no matter how many editors and how many proofreaders and how many times the beta reader reads the book, inevitably there is going to be one typo.
Oh.
And there is going to be one sharp-eyed reader out in heaven knows where.
Her name is Natalie. That's my sister.
Right. Oh, is that right? You know her name?
Every cozy mystery we have in the house, I can guarantee you, she has marked very delicately. She writes in pencil so she won't, you know, ruin the value of a book. But she will make all the little corrections, and it'll be you know, that typo or a grammatical error. Those really get her. Those are the ones she calls me to.
Just kills me. Honest to God. But you know that's the way it is. We're all human after all.
But
and
Natalie
of course,
forgives you.
Spell check doesn't help either.
No.
You know, that can make it even worse when you go back and do a spell check.
Oh, yeah. That's not it. You need somebody like my sister, Natalie. She was born spell checking. As a matter of fact, she was she's older than I am, and she was correcting me the day I started with the crayons. So, you know. But she loves your book, so what can I...
Well, thank you. Oh, please. I hope she doesn't find a typo in the new one. Because today is the birthday of the book, and I'd like to think that I get through one day without somebody contacting me about the typo.
Okay. Well, I think you are delightful. Your books are delightful. And the wonderful thing is that, as I said, I think you've done everything right. You've developed along the way. You've gotten better along the way. And the covers are great. The storylines are great. And they're fresh. You always come up with something new. Like, I didn't expect this. I never saw Carol as a campaign manager.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, so, you know. Everybody has a goal in life. Yeah. So maybe she'll write a mystery someday. What do you think about that?
That could well happen. Or she might become a radio personality.
Oh, wouldn't that be awful? Jim would be so jealous. I don't think that marriage could not survive.
Well, you know, she could become she could start a radio program like mine. Well, you know, you have all sorts of possibilities with her.
Oh, I know.
Isn't it fun? Isn't it wonderful?
It is fun. And so are you, Patsy. This has been a lot of fun talking to you. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I love talking to you. And next time, of course, that you wear off of this masks and this place doesn't smell like Clorox number 5, you'll come here in the studio and then we can go out to lunch afterwards.
Oh, that sounds like a plan. And hopefully next year we'll see what happens. God bless.
Yeah, because there's a place here that has quesadillas, and you might write a book called Quesadillas Can Be Murder. Who knows?
Oh, I don't know. You know what? Natalie would tell me I spelled quesadillas wrong. I'm not going to risk that. I'm sorry. Not going to risk that.
Okay. Well, where and how can people find you? We know the books are sold. All of them are sold wherever books are sold. And Politics Can Be Murder. Every Wife Has a Story is the new book, and it's just perfect. Get it, and then you go back and start from the beginning of this wonderful series.
Yeah, but read it right now. It'll give you a smile, hopefully, and take a little stress off of your life. That's my advice to people.
I think they will. Now, you're on Facebook. Do you have a webpage, too?
Oh, yes, babyboomermysteries.com.
Okay.
Yep.
That's it. Everybody, you can go to babyboomersmysteries.com and find out more about these wonderful, wonderful books. And, of course, Susan Santangelo. I love the name. You can just keep saying it all the time. It's just very lyrical.
Yes, it is. I thank my husband for the name. It's a very nice name.
Yes, it's delightful. And you are delightful. And I want to thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you. And
thank you,
everybody, you will love Lucy and Ethel's antics in this book. what a kick. You obviously you love dogs.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Great. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, she's so sweet. She's so nice and really wonderful example of a series. If you are thinking of writing a mystery series, cozy books, this is a nice series to have a look at because, as I said, book one, start at book one, go through, or start at book 9 and then go back. Start at book 9 today, which is called Politics Can Be Murder. Every Wife Has a Story. And then I would suggest you go back and start at the beginning. And it will give you an idea of how an author can develop, get better all the time, and just enjoy the whole series. And during this pandemic-y thingy, we need to enjoy something. And she always will have something funny in there. Well, lots of something funnies that will make you laugh. We're going to have a commercial, and then I'll be back with my next guest.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And in a minute, I don't think they've called in yet, have they? No. Okay, we're just waiting for a call in from New York. And I'm really excited about this next speaker. Her story is amazing. Meanwhile, I want to tell you, go to my Facebook page, Radio Joy on Paper, and I have put up some T-shirts there that you can buy. One of them is A Page a Day. I mentioned it on the earlier interview. And the reason I've done that is some of you, like, you need that inspiration. You need that little something little to kick you into action. And so I thought a T-shirt that says A Page a Day, and, you know, if that's what it takes, you put it on and just start. Because so many of you have been writing to me and sending me emails, and I love it. And my email is patsy.radio@gmail.com. And I love your emails about how you're starting a book. But then you don't continue it. You start and you stop and you start and you stop. And I really do want to encourage all of you to start writing your books. And because there is a story in all of you, and I know that you will feel really good about it. And it depends, of course, what everyone has their own story. And my guest in a few minutes has a really amazing story, but you all have stories. They might not be as dramatic as the one I'm going to be talking about in a minute. It might be about a crazy uncle. It might be about your grandparents. It might be about, it might be about anything. It might be a cookbook. It might be a book for kids. But there is a book in you, and why not use this opportunity? So many of us are sort of stuck at home. We're not socializing. We're not going out. We're not going to restaurants and visiting friends. So take this opportunity. Don't look at it as a loss. Look at it as it's an opportunity for you to actually take some time and put your words down on paper, because that is what I'm always talking about, joy on paper. It doesn't mean that the book has to be joyful. It means that you find that joy, the release of having your words down on paper. And it makes a difference in so many ways to your life and to the people around you, because sometimes they get tired of hearing you say, I'm going to write a book someday, I'm going to write a book someday. And you never do it. And for me, I know I felt sorry for people who say that they're going to write a book and they don't do it. So if you have time, this is it. And, you know, get there. And you don't need a typewriter. You don't need a computer. You can just write by hand. And now I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper an author who, she has put her story on paper, and much of it was not a joy, but the fact that she wrote the book is important to all of us because it is a wonderful book. And I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper Amra Sabish El Reyes. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly. Amra?
Thank you for having me, and you get an A in pronunciation of my name, so that's pretty close to perfect.
Good. Well, you know, it's really an honor to have you on my program, because I love to talk to all authors. I talk to every author, you know, because I have this eclectic joy in finding different types of books because I love to read. And so when I first heard about this story, I thought, oh my goodness, this is one of those important books, an important book that really we need to have out there and telling the story of what you went through and how you can help. And you've written it deliberately as a young adult book so that younger people can relate to it. So tell us here about your book. It's called The Cat I Never Named, A True Story of Love, War, and Survival. And it's a powerful book.
Thank you. Thank you so much for those kind words. Well, the cat I never named is a story, as the official description by Bloomsbury suggests, a story of my survival of genocide in Bosnia and Herzegovina against, committed by Serbian and Serb military against Bosnian Muslims or Bosniaks, and I'm one of those Muslims. And just briefly for your listeners, I was born hated in the former Yugoslavia, but I never really expected that a discrimination I had experienced would eventually lead into a full-blown genocide. And as a teen, when I was 16 years old, my life changed. I was, at the time, a volleyball player, and I was a complete mathematics and physics nerd. I had great friends, and then overnight, in a way, everything changed. And the very military that once was a military that was supposed to protect me started executing, torturing, raping Bosnian Muslims. And
well,
so my
you
life
know,
became about...
Most people, certainly most Americans, have no idea. They have no idea about Yugoslavia. And what Yugoslavia was, and it's like incomprehensible to them. They've heard these words, but they really don't understand. Now, I will tell you, one of the proudest, this is a really strange thing, my husband and I went to Yugoslavia. Well, one of the proudest things, this is before it all collapsed, and we were stopped at the border, and they didn't want to, well, they didn't allow us in, although we had papers and everything, and there's no reason. It was just arbitrary. And it really got my husband angry. So at one point, he said to them, he really needed to use the bathroom. And so he went and he used the bathroom, and he came back out smiling, and we got in our car and drove away from the border, and he said, I won't use the word, but he peed in Yugoslavia. And he said, so that was our Yugoslavia adventure. And everything started collapsing after that.
Well, in my case, it certainly, my life changed in an instant, if you will. And I started living sort of this unimaginable nightmare that I just couldn't have imagined as a teen prior to the war. I was surviving, I was starving, I was escaping death, not going to school, which many parents and many children and teens will be able to relate to. I was not able to be in school under normal circumstances for nearly 4 years.
Explain how one day you're going to school and everything feels normal, but then suddenly half of the class disappears. Explain what that felt like to you.
To give a sense to your listeners who are not familiar with former Yugoslavia, in essence, it was one country that had a number of imagined states in it. But there was an ethnic group that really dominated the political life, that dominated the military in my old country, and those were the ethnic group of Serbs. And at some point, Serbs decided that they didn't want anyone else in the country and that they wanted to ethnically cleanse and create this pure, ethnically, racially pure nation called Greater Serbia. And what that meant is that they would use the military, which they controlled to begin with, to go around former Yugoslavia and simply execute everyone in their way. And the reason why the conflict and the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina was particularly gruesome is that the majority of Bosnians were Muslims. They were Bosnian Muslims or Bosniaks as an ethnic group. And what once was called Yugoslav National Army and what really became de facto Serb Army, they simply started rounding us up, executing us, torturing us, and raping us simply for who we were, simply for being a Bosnian Muslim. And as you can imagine, no American out there can imagine something like this ever happening in the United States. And former Yugoslavia and Bosnia in particular were diverse places. And I, too, couldn't imagine that this would happen. My own uncle, who married into my mom's family, was one of the officers high up in the Yugoslav National Army. So I couldn't imagine that someone who lived in Belgrade but who was related to me could one day in any way be involved in a persecution of someone like me. And my story is written with the hope that it will warn America and warn Americans how far hatred can take us in this country. And there is certainly a lesson that hate is not exclusive to any one group of people, any one person. We are all capable of feeling it. And the question becomes, how do we address the hatred that is on the rise in the United States in a constructive way to counter it, to bring us together as one nation, as one country?
Well, it's a complicated part of the world. And, you know, the reason we wanted to go in Yugoslavia was I was doing research on a book about Franz Joseph and the Emperor Elizabeth of Austria. And, of course, at one time, this entire area was part of the Austrian Empire. And it's like it's so complicated, and it's really, even today, you know, back then, Franz Joseph, when I was doing my research, like he was going crazy because it was so impossible to get everybody, you know, sort of on the same wavelength. And it's you went through 1,100 days of absolute terror.
That's correct. That is how long the a siege lasted. And while my story is very personal and very specific to my experience in the region where I grew up, it is also a story that has powerful parallels with what is happening in the United States today. I think that the readers may start reading the first few pages and find themselves surprised that they can actually identify and feel empathy with the emotional tale that they are exposed to through reading The Cat They Never Named. And just to share with you a couple of examples, yesterday I received a very powerful emotional email from someone who is an American soldier who was deployed in Bosnia and who was deployed in a number of other places around the world, and who wrote to me and said that my book made him cry in a way that he never did reading a book, and that he only wished that before he was deployed, he was exposed to my writing and The Cat I Never Named. And in general, for most readers who have reached out to me, whether they know anything about Bosnia or former Yugoslavia, or they're simply picking it up because of a curious title or amazing reviews that the book has received, the consistent feedback has been that they started reading it and they couldn't put it down. And it's 2 a.m. and they feel emotionally moved to write to me and tell me how their story connects to, or my experience connects to their story and what they have lived through. So I think while the book is very specific to the region, it has some very powerful messages that are relevant to the racism and exclusion and marginalization and social unrest happening in the United States today.
Or all over the world, because it's also in Africa, there are similar stories happening in other countries around the world. It's hard for people to understand, and that's why the fact that you've written it with a young adult in mind, and that you have the cat, we have to talk about the cat a little bit, because because it does, it is a great title, and it right away captures sort of the interest. And then once you start reading the book, well, there are some amazing stories. We don't want to give them away, but this cat who was never named is actually not, like, probably going to be the most famous cat in the world.
I would agree that Mati, which means kitty in Bosnian, was one and only. And just to share with your listeners that Mati came into my hometown of Bihać early on, just before the war started, before we were besieged with refugees who were escaping persecution in other towns and villages around my city. And I will never know, but I suspect that Mati had her own family that must have been killed in the process, and she continued to follow the refugees. And I won't give away the details of a very powerful and emotional encounter, the moment when I meet Mati for the first time. But Mati became incredibly important to my entire family. She adopted herself into our family. She was really not wanted, and I'm honest about that in the book, in a sense that we couldn't afford to have a pet at the time. The war is about to start. We barely have anything to eat, and my mom didn't want a hair on a cat hair on the furniture, and I was afraid of the any animal with claws, because I was attacked by a German shepherd when I was little. And but Mati didn't care. She wanted to be part of our family, and she found her way into our hearts. And I'll just share one detail, that on the very first day of the war, June 12, 1992, or first day of bombing for my city, my brother and I survived while four of our friends were blown up by an explosion, by a bomb, and we only survived because of Mati. Mati saved us in that moment. And so if it were not for Mati, I wouldn't be here. There would be no the cat I never named, and my life would have ended on the very first day of the war.
Well, it, as I said, it's such a powerful story and beautifully told. And, you know, although, you know, things are happening in the States, and young people here might think they're suffering because they have to stay inside and they can't go out and they can't have parties, and they have no idea what real suffering is. And of course, they have no idea of being hungry. How very hungry you were, that there was, when we're talking about no food, there's really no food. Most people, when they think there's no food, you know, there's leftover spaghetti in the refrigerator, or there's cold chicken. That's not no food. You really know what no food is.
That's correct. And food is really one of the themes in the book, and is brought up in some comic ways. And so there are also moments, I think readers will very quickly realize that this is an emotional journey reading this book, that they will be laughing and crying sometimes almost at the same time. I'm going to share that the reason why I felt particularly compelled to write this story at this time is because I am afraid of the trajectory that our country is on, and I am afraid that hatred being blinding, and in othering other groups and stereotypes and Islamophobia and racism, that all those kinds of emotions and feelings and trends that we're receiving can bring America to a much more difficult place. And my hope is that this story, by vividly reminding everyone how destructive hate is, can be a warning for us that we never want to be in that place, and that we, each one of us, should feel empowered by this story to examine what it is that we can do as individuals to be a better version of ourselves. I would say that often we feel that, and this is clearly a feeling and a sentiment I am familiar with given what I had lived through, There are always these external forces that dictate our life circumstances, right? We can't stop pandemic. We can't stop social unrest as individuals. Sometimes we feel powerless. But in the war, I learned one of the greatest lessons, and it was that even when I felt powerless, there was always something that I could do at the individual level to better myself, to improve myself. And that is how I build my own self-resilience, and that's how I hope the young adults and adults in America who are finding it difficult to get through the pandemic, to get through social unrest, or who are experiencing marginalization or exclusion themselves, they can read this book and find it as a source of inspiration to become better version of themselves.
And also, I hope also they understand that even when you were going through all of this, you were living through hell, you continued to study, you wanted to learn, you didn't give up. And how important it is for young people that really education is important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'll share one detail that hopefully will reflect how strongly I feel about importance of education. And when I refer to education, I don't mean only sitting in the classroom. I couldn't do that for much of the my time during the war for nearly 4 years. We only occasionally had school because of the threat of bombing. But education really refers to self-education and educating others that are in our proximity. There was a moment in the war when my family expected that we would be executed. The Serb soldiers were coming down a hill across my home. They were burning down everything in their way, and we could physically see them approach our neighborhood. And my father turned to me and said something that no father ever wants to say to a 16-year-old daughter. He said, "Amra, I may no longer be able to protect you. We may all be killed, you may be raped, but if you survive, there's one thing that no one can ever take away from you, and that is your education."
Exactly, exactly. Just tell us, what was it like when you finally got to America? What was that moment like for you? How did you feel?
It was an incredibly empowering moment, and I'll share the story. I was standing in the immigration line at that time. I was 20 years old. The genocide obviously started when I was 16. So after 4 years of horror, I was a broken person. I spoke broken English because I learned it by teaching myself during the war. I was terrified of men in uniform, because men in uniforms meant to me at the time killing and rape. After a long time, this immigration officer who was examining my papers and documents and my passport and was looking at me, and I was nervous and sweating and scared that I would be sent back to my destroyed country. I simply couldn't believe that America wanted or would accept someone like me. And after a while, he handed me back my passport, and he said, "Ma'am, welcome to the United States of America. I am sorry for what happened to you. You are safe now." And that moment revived me. That moment gave me hope that we do have shared humanity, and that is the kind of America that I want to inspire with this story. And
well, I think the Cat I Never Named is a marvelous book, wonderful book for young people, for everybody. Do you have a website that you want people to go to?
Sure. Anyone who wants to connect with me, they can certainly find me through my website, sabikilreyes.org, so my full last name, or they can find me on social media. I have to admit, I wasn't a big social media user until this pandemic, but now we're limited to that kind of interaction. But they can find me on Twitter at Amra Sabik, PhD, or they can find me via Facebook or Instagram at Amar Sabikil Reyes. And or they can simply Google the cat I never named, and
that's
they'll find their way to me.
To you. Well, I want to thank you so much, Amra, for being a guest today on Joy on Paper. It's a joy and an honor to talk to you. And I'm just, it really, your story is powerful. And I'm so glad that you put it down on paper and are sharing it with the world.
Thank you so much, Patsy. I appreciate you inviting me, and I appreciate your kind words. And I hope you get to go back to Bosnia one day. It's a beautiful country. There's no war anymore. Of course, there's pandemic. But if you ever do visit that part of the world again, please do let me know.
It's a beautiful world, part of the world, and wonderful food. When they have food, they know how to cook, that's for sure.
That is true.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Wow. What a story. And I can tell you, for any cat lover, you have to read the book. There's difficult parts in this book. But this cat was truly, like, we talk about an extraordinary cat. People say cats aren't the same as dogs. This is an amazing cat. It's unbelievable. And a great story that really, if you have any teenagers, kids college age, and for yourself, it's just a wonderful story to read. It's hard, but it does give us hope. And that's part of exactly what she said when she arrived in America. And when the guy behind the, taking the passport, when he said, "Welcome to America," that was a moment that changed her life. And now she's a professor at Columbia University. She's got two masters. She got her bachelor's here, two masters, and a PhD. And look at that. She's written a book. And as I said, you can do it. Because remember, one of the things I always tell you is that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing a page a day. Go to my Facebook, Radio Joy on Paper, and you order yourself a shirt, a page a day, and you will be on the program next year, maybe. That'd be fun. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. Say, "I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room." Thank you, Big Ed. Thank you for everything. Bye-bye now.